Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. I'm sitting in today for Doug Wortham, who's on assignment recording a couple of special shows, and we'll be back next week after he visits with some of our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull soldiers. On today's show, we're going to learn how the Minnesota National Guard honors some extraordinary soldiers and airmen, meet the new American Legion Department commander, and check in with the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Today we come together to mark World Mental Health Day, a day that holds special significance for our Army family. This day is a powerful reminder of the importance of mental health and the unique challenges faced by those who serve. For many in our ranks, the demands of military life, from intense deployments to the transition back to civilian life, can impact mental well-being. It is essential that we build a culture of support and openness where no one feels isolated in their struggles. Let's use this day to reinforce our commitment to mental health by actively supporting one another, encouraging honest conversations, and breaking down the barriers of stigma. Remember, seeking help is a sign of strength and resilience. Together, let's continue to support each other and prioritize the mental health of every member of the Army community. Thank you.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now in the studio is Don Kerr, who is the Executive Director for the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, the state agency that administers the National Guard. Mr. Kerr retired from the Minnesota National Guard as a colonel in March of 2008 after serving in many roles over a 28-year military career, and he was honored shortly after that by becoming a brevet brigadier general. General Kerr, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back.
Don, you worked with several tags over the years. You joined the Department of Military Affairs in 2008, and one of them was General Nash, Rick Nash. And before he left, he made you an honorary or a brevet brigadier general just to recognize all your years of service and all your great work at the Department of Military Affairs. That must have been just a wonderful honor.
It was a great honor, Tom, and I'm very appreciative to General Nash for doing that. I served with General Nash in a number of capacities over the years, of course, because that's how service in the National Guard works. But it was definitely a great honor, and the timing was good on it. My mother was still alive at the time, so she was able to participate in the ceremony, and I'm sure she appreciated that for her remaining days.
I'm sure she loved that, and I didn't know that. Great to hear that, sir. Can you tell us a little bit, the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs is the state agency that oversees and supports the Minnesota National Guard. Can you tell us how that all works?
I sure can, Tom. So the National Guard is established in federal law to have a dual status. That is, it has a federal capacity to work for the president during time of war or emergency when called out by either the president or the Congress. But when we're not at war, the National Guard is under the control of the states, the governors of the 54 states and territories that have established National Guards. And while they're in that state service, the state has a responsibility to oversee and support the activities of the National Guard. And in addition to those oversight activities, we also provide some services to the federal government, kind of like a contractor. So, for example, the security forces at our air bases and at the Camp Ripley Military Reservation and our aviation flight facilities, those are all state employees that are reimbursed by the federal government. And the reason the feds do it that way is it allows them to use contracted support for those tasks so they don't have to use the end strength of the Army or the Air Force to fulfill those non-wartime roles. So it's kind of a cost-saving, really more of a headspace-saving measure on the part of the Army and the Air Force to get some of that support. And we do a lot of the facilities management. We do roads and grounds work and, of course, the support of the installation at Camp Ripley. All those things often are done by state employees, usually federally reimbursed. And so I help manage that civilian and some military activity on the state side under state control for the Adjutant General.
And you have to manage those different buckets of funds because some of them are federal funds, some are state funds, and there's other statuses that you have to keep track of. All confusing for somebody that's not been in your seat.
It gets pretty interesting because, yeah, we have to comply not only with state law but also with federal law, and sometimes the two are not perfectly nested in the way that they work out. And so those are conversations that I have to have with the United States Property and Fiscal Officer and with our legal team to make sure when we're doing things, we do them in accordance with HOIL, if you will.
Very good. We're speaking to Don Kerr, who's the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. And Don, we've referred to Major General Sean Mankey. He's the Commanding General of the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard, but he's also a commissioner for the governor for the state of Minnesota.
That's right, Tom. He is on the governor's cabinet, and he runs the Department of Military Affairs. He's in a little bit of a different situation, though. He is appointed by the governor. It's an apolitical position, and he does not require Senate confirmation. So he is instead appointed for a seven-year term by the governor. As it happens, General Mankey was appointed by Governor Walz, and he's about halfway through his seven-year term now. So at some point, we'll be looking at a change of venue there for him. But he's still got a couple, 3 years to finish off his tour, and then we'll see what happens.
And, of course, you referred to it a little bit before, but the Minnesota National Guard, unlike the reserves, has a federal duty, a state duty, and local duties, and they can serve in those capacities where the reserve, the Army Reserves, the Air Reserves, those are all federal.
And that's correct, Tom. And so they have different restrictions on what they can do, and the process for getting their support in the event of emergency is much more difficult because it really has to go to the Secretary of Defense to get approval to do any of those activities, whereas the National Guard is available to the governors of the various states. So in our case, the governor of Minnesota for use when necessary in Minnesota at his order.
So just quickly, when our Red Bull soldiers are deployed overseas, they're in a federal status. If the governor calls somebody up to help with an emergency or a tornado or something like that, then that's in a state status. But the Guard can do that. Reserves don't. Don, we've got about 4 minutes left here. We're starting a new fiscal year. Your federal year ends on September 30th. Are there some big initiatives coming up for this new fiscal year?
Well, Tom, that's an interesting question because not only are we at the end of the federal fiscal year, and now we've actually just begun a new one here, but we're only a quarter of the way through the second year of the biennium in the state government. So we have this misalignment between the two levels of government that creates some opportunities for us. It makes some things a little bit easier in a way because we aren't running out of money in both pots at the same time. So that's kind of interesting. But on the federal side, of course, once again, a continuing resolution has been passed, and so no new projects can be started, and that hampers a little bit of efficiency inside the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, Marine Corps. But at least we have the continuing resolution. We know we've got money now to fund the government through the 20th of December. Of course, that's less of a factor on the state side because our state budget has been passed and moving on. And I will talk a little bit about a couple of projects that we're doing that are state-funded. That we got resources from the legislature last year and have put into place, and we're pretty happy with them. So we did two big projects that we added that are kind of people-focused. The first is the Cyber Coordination Cell. Now, we all know that cyber is a growth industry right now, and cyber defense is an important thing. What we identified was kind of a gap between what we see as military cyber defense and what we were seeing in the private sector. And one of the things that we identified was risk in that, I'll try to articulate it this way. So I spent a lot of time on a coordinating staff or running a coordinating staff. And one of the things they trained us in the Army was when you get a new piece of information, particularly threat information, the first thing you should ask yourself is who else needs to know? And then you should share that information with them. And what we were finding was the nature of the DOD system is, well, we aren't going to tell anybody anything. And sometimes private industry and state government work the same way. And what the purpose of the cyber coordination cell really is to establish kind of personal relationships between different entities. For example, Minnesota IT, the cabinet level agency that governs the infrastructure for state government, and some of the private organizations that coordinate and collaborate to make sure that cybersecurity occurs in the banking industry and in commerce generally. We brought this team on to kind of be liaisons between them so that when something comes down on the DOD side, we know who to talk to warn them or to ask for their help, and vice versa. If they see something in the private sector that may be of interest to the department, our cyber coordination cell has the relationships to be able to pass that in both directions.
Secrets are good, but not always. You need to know what's coming down.
Yeah, you kind of need the threat indicators and warnings, and you'd really like to be able to share ways to mitigate risk. if it's available and if it won't compromise national security.
Very good, sir. Don, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more with Don Kerr, Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Don Kerr, who's the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, the state agency that administers the National Guard here in Minnesota. And, Don, we were talking about everything that the Department of Military Affairs does and supporting the Minnesota National Guard. Of course, the Minnesota National Guard has facilities all over the state, not the least of which is Camp Ripley, one of the best training facilities in the country. Got a big facility now out in Arden Hills and all kinds of armories. I know that you've got a long-term plan to maintain and take care of those armories and upgrade all of that. That's got to be something that a lot of people work on almost constantly.
That is absolutely correct, Tom. It's a constant battle to just kind of stay ahead of rust, if you will. We've got 63 armories and hundreds of buildings on Camp Ripley, and all of that stuff requires maintenance, like new roofs periodically, windows, electrical upgrades, all of the things that happen just like they would in your home over time. And because we have so many of them, it becomes a monumental task. And, of course, the cost of maintaining those things has really escalated. And we're fortunate in Minnesota that we do get some money from the legislature to meet the state share. Typically, we have to match federal funds with state funds. And our team, our facilities team at Camp Ripley, has been so efficient that we often get, I would say we punch outside our weight class on the federal side with regard to getting funding. And that allows us to maintain the world-class facility at Camp Ripley. Because almost everything at Camp Ripley is 100% federally funded. There are a few state projects up there, but it's kind of the opposite of what one would expect. The armories actually require a 50% state and federal share, but on Camp Ripley, almost everything is federally funded. So whenever we can get extra federal funding, we tend to try to improve the infrastructure at Camp Ripley to make it an even better training site, along with the training site at Arden Hills as well on the Army side.
So that means you got to keep track of a 30-year plan and say, how am I going to handle these in the budgets, and how are we going to plan for it in this biennium, the next one with the federal money? Another big task for you at the Department of Military Affairs.
It is, and then, of course, we always get the changing rule set. We used to plan on getting one federal military construction project every 2 to 3 years, and now because of constrained resources on the federal side, we're being told to plan for once every 7 years. Well, the problem with that is we've got 63 armories that all have to be replaced someday. And when I can only do one every 7 years, it's going to take a long time. So that plan isn't going to work real well. But we do have we do extensive planning to look at, okay, where do we really need to do our investment and where can we afford to divest? And we just did a refreshment to that plan. We call it the Readiness Center Transformation Master Plan. We actually look out 50 years, but we really can only execute out to about 30 because facts change, et cetera. But we're just getting ready to kind of redo that. And it really does drive how we plan for our community engagements to make sure that we're supporting the local communities in addition to supporting the military training needs of the Army.
Don, as we said earlier, you served in the military for 28 years. You've been with the Department of Military Affairs for 17 years. And in all of those years, you met an awful lot of soldiers and airmen and civilians that have done some extraordinary things for the Minnesota National Guard and for the military in Minnesota. And I know that the Army side has had a way to honor some of those extraordinary people. I believe it's called the Court of Honor.
Yeah, Tom, it's actually a memorialization program. The Court of Honor is where we induct honorees to make sure that we recognize their service. It's been in place since 1933 when Camp Ripley was first established. And the Adjutant General at the time, General Walsh, noted that, hey, there should be a way for us to recognize historic figures from the National Guard. And many of the terrain features on modern-day Camp Ripley were named in the 30s after Civil War veterans of the Minnesota National Guard who had distinguished themselves in combat in the Civil War, and some others from World War I service predominantly. But we decided that that needed to be expanded. So the program's been in effect, like I said, since 1933, been somewhat sporadic in the way that it moved on. But over that time, we've memorialized, as of this year, it's up to 532 individuals. And those are individuals who distinguished themselves in combat or in peacetime service, both in service or who died in service in some cases. And we're really happy with the program. But about a decade ago, we started noting that, well, this is really an Army-focused program. And there were good reasons for that because the regulation that governed it was an Army regulation. But we started getting some observation from our Air Guard members that, well, you know, we don't really do anything like this for the air, and we're really not that interested in being memorialized at Camp Ripley because Camp Ripley isn't as big a deal to the Air Guard members as it is to the Army members because they tend to train.
Shoot and goes.
That's exactly right, yeah, and they just kind of don't spend as much time there as the Army. The Army guys get deeply ingrained. They've got a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the mud out there. But it was brought to our attention that perhaps we needed a parallel program from the air side. And so Brigadier General at the time, now Major General Brevet Dave Hamler, asked the question, can we establish a similar program? We thought, well, that's a great idea, but how do we do that when we got two different wings?
We're speaking with Don Kerr, who's the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. And so the next thing we're leading up to is the Army's equivalent, or the Army has the Court of Honor, and the Air National Guard now has the Flight of Honor.
That's right, Tom, the Flight of Honor. And our dilemma was, okay, great, where do we put the Flight of Honor? For the Army, it's obvious at Camp Ripley, but then there's this big fight between the two wings. We have a wing in Duluth, we have a wing in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Well, we can't just cover one, not the other. And so we thought, well, how do we do this? And someone came up, and I hate to give credit here, because as an Army guy, I hate to give any credit to anybody in the Air Guard. The little tongue-in-cheek there.
Come on,
but
now, somebody, Air Force is okay.
Somebody on the air side came up with the idea, well, let's just have two of them, and we'll do both of them. We'll alternate year to year where the ceremony is going to be, but we'll engrave the names at both places. It's like, what a brilliant idea. How simple and how elegant. And so since 2021, we've been inducting members into the Flight of Honor at Minneapolis-St. Paul and at Duluth. This year we're scheduled to go to Duluth, and that's actually happening. It will be next Thursday, if this show airs when I think it's going to air, in Duluth. And to date, we've recognized 33 members of the Air National Guard in a fashion similar to the members of the Army Guard at the Court of Honor. So we do a ceremony. We invite the families. We give a few moments for the members who are being recognized to speak, and it's really a wonderful program that's been very well received.
So in both cases, these are military personnel and civilian personnel who have distinguished themselves in some way or another. And what is the process for nominating somebody to become a member of the Court of Honor or the Flight of Honor?
Yeah, so we actually have two boards, one for the Army and one for the Air. They are chaired by retired officers generally, but they are also included retired non-commissioned officers who understand how the two service components work and represent their service components in that fashion. And every year we put out a notice that goes out to all of the serving airmen, all of the serving soldiers, and through our retiree list, soliciting nominations to the Court of Honor or the Flight of Honor. And that generally happens. We'll put that notice out, I think, in about December. And generally the boards meet in April to begin deliberating. And as stated, we do typically we do the Court of Honor the first weekend in October. This year we had to go to last week in September. I had beautiful weather for it. Camp Ripley just came from there. And the Flight of Honor is a corresponding weekday, usually in early October. And that's what we've got going this year. So the board goes through and deliberates, and we notify everybody. And in the end, they wind up receiving a lovely medallion with their name engraved on it, a photograph with a plaque on it for their family, and their names are engraved forever in granite plaques at both, in the case of the Air Guard, at both Duluth and at Minneapolis-St. Paul, and in the case of Camp Ripley, currently at Camp Ripley, but we're going to move all the plaques out to the museum when the new museum finishes their completion or their construction here in May of 2026.
And the ceremony, for anybody that's ever gone to this, is it's kind of historic because you're in there. There's people who have died in the line of duty. There's people who are heroes. There's people that went above and beyond the call of duty to do things. And so some of the inductees are posthumous. They've died. You learn about who they are, what they did, how they earned this honor. And then some of them are still there, and you hear from some of them that about their time in service. It's a beautiful ceremony, and it's a great way to honor those folks that have done extraordinary things for the state of Minnesota and for the military.
And Tom, all those records are then deposited in the Minnesota Military and Veterans Museum at Camp Ripley. And the inductees go all the way back to Colonel William Colville. He was the first one entered in the Court of Honor, and Colonel Colville was the commander of the 1st Minnesota throughout the war, the Civil War, and the Eastern Front, and culminating with their battle at Gettysburg. So it's a pretty august group that you're a member of once you get inducted into the Corps or Flight of Honor.
And for those that are still alive and they're inducted, it's a little strange to see your name engraved in granite when you're still alive. But what an honor for those folks. Don, we're just about out of time. Appreciate you coming over and take some time to spend with us on Minnesota Military Radio once again.
Thanks, Tom. As always, it has been my privilege to be here.
Thank you, sir. That was Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet the new American Legion Department Commander. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the new American Legion Department Commander. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Brad Lindsay.
Hunting season, a popular Minnesota tradition, is upon us. Families, friends, and colleagues take part in hunting together, making memories lasting a lifetime. Each year, organizations around the state provide disabled veterans with the opportunity to hunt, enjoying a common experience together focused on the sights, sounds, and smells of the great outdoors that help them return to joyful times gone by. These events connect our state's heroes with the best hunting guides while providing a therapeutic environment in which to heal. After all, it's because of the sacrifices of our service members and veterans that we are able to do the things we enjoy most in the great outdoors. Thank you to the individuals, veteran service organizations, and private companies for giving our veterans these wonderful opportunities.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said earlier, we're going to now meet the new American Legion Department Commander, and his name is Dr. Carl Moon. Commander Moon, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
And thank you so much, Tom.
We should be talking about you, but I'd be remiss. We got to talk about Peggy Moon, who was a former department commander for the American Legion, I think about 10 years ago, and she's been on the show I don't know how many times, but she's delightful, and she happens to be your bride.
She is.
And you met her long ago when you were in the Air Force?
Yes.
And how did it come about that she went through the chairs of the state for the American Legion before you? I'm guessing you were still working as an eye doctor.
I was. And, you know, it's... She was eligible for the Legion before I became eligible during time of service. So she was a lot more active, and I was still working. So.
And she's better looking than you anyway.
She definitely is.
Oh, she was a lot of fun, and she wasn't afraid of the microphone, I can tell you that.
Much, much better at that than I am going to be, so.
Well, she had a great year. We were pleased to have her on the radio, and I know she's served a lot since then in various capacities for the American Legion, and busy lady, smart lady, you picked a good one.
Best mentor I've ever had.
All right, Doctor, can you tell us a little bit about your service in the Air Force?
Yes, I was in optometry school, signed up for a scholarship program through the military and picked the Air Force. My dad had been in the Air Force and went 4 years to optometry school, and then I owed them 4 years. So they sent me to beautiful Biloxi, Mississippi, for the first 4 years, and I got offered an assignment right after that. So in 1980, I got an assignment to Madrid, Spain, Torrejon Air Base.
And you took your wife and children with you.
I did. Initially, it was a little traumatic, but after we got over there, everybody loved it. The kids spoke Spanish better than we did, and we enjoyed the culture and the food and the people.
And when you came back, I understand you spent quite a few years up at the St. Cloud VA.
Well, yeah, I spent some time in between. I got out in 84 as a captain and tried private practice for a while, didn't like it, couldn't figure out why I didn't like it. And then I found out that the VA up in St. Cloud was looking for an eye doctor, thought, what the heck, I applied for it and got it and found a great home. Spent 20 years there and retired in 2020.
So you enjoyed taking care of our veterans up there?
I did, and it was more like what I did in the military, which is you just take care of the patient. You don't have to worry about all the business and insurances and all the other issues.
All right. Excuse me. Are you retired now?
I am. Retired in 2020.
And then decided you were going to go through the chairs for the American Legion for the state of Minnesota. Now, was that something Peggy put you up to, or is
not
that something
at all. Not at all. Not at all. I just felt it was time. I have time now to do this and devote my time to it, and just felt strong about being putting my time back in and giving what I could to the Legion.
So like your wife burned up a car 10 years ago when she was the department commander, you're going to try to do the same thing.
I'm going to see if I could do more mileage than she did, yes.
And get out to, how many posts do we have, American Legion posts in the state, roughly? Hundreds.
Yes. I mean, we go from Iowa all the way up to Baudette and both borders.
And you're going to see a lot of them during your year.
I hope so. I hope to get as many as I can. There's a lot, and a lot of great people out there.
Okay, we're speaking with Commander Carl Moon from the Department of Minnesota American Legion on Minnesota Military Radio. Commander, can you share with us what's the mission of the Department of Minnesota American Legion?
It's basically to take care of our veterans. We're here to help not just the veterans, but their families, their children, and our communities. Our people serve to fight for our communities and our way of life. And we're here to help.
And eligibility for our service members to join the American Legion, it's the most liberal eligibility of, you know, VFW, you have to have fought in a war, Purple Heart, you have to have been shot. But anyone basically who served is eligible to join the American Legion?
Now it is. It was restricted. I came on after the invasion of Grenada, and that was my eligibility. Now, since the Iraqi issues, we've had plenty of time. Everybody's eligible because we're still in conflicts.
Now, do today's veterans, those from the recent 20 years wars, are they aware of what the American Legion is doing? Are they going to be like us Vietnam veterans were way back when? We were busy, we were going to school, we were making families. We didn't have time for the service organizations that young in life, that early in life.
And it's the same thing now. You know, we find that you have your families and you got activities with your kids and everything, but we want to make them aware that we have benefits. We have programs that will benefit family and children. We have scholarships for kids. And we have a lot of community involvement that we can participate in.
And you have an auxiliary.
Yes.
Which means it's not just the member, but the spouse of a member is also eligible to join.
And I am also an auxiliary member because I am married to a Legion member.
That's right.
So they just recently, in the last 2 years, they allow men to join also if you're married to a Legion member.
I didn't introduce you correctly, Commander. You're Peggy's husband.
I am.
Well, you'll change that this year because everybody's going to meet you. So when we're talking about the American Legion, is the membership shrinking or is it holding steady?
Nationally, this past year, we exceeded the year before. That was the first time we've done that. It's been such a slide for so many years as losing members. But nationally last year, we exceeded the previous year's membership numbers. In Minnesota, we are down. I think we're at 56,000 for last year. My goal is 57,000. People say I'm crazy, and I said, well, you know what? I really believe in our programs. I believe in what we can do to help our veterans and their families. And why wouldn't they want to join and help us?
Commander, we were visiting with my prior guest, Don Kerr, and he pointed out that unlike when I was in Vietnam, most of us served one tour, maybe two. But today's military, especially the National Guard, whether they're Army or Air, they go on multiple tours, and therefore there might be a smaller number of people eligible to join?
Exactly. We have a lot of veterans that are eligible to join, and all you've had to do is serve one day on active duty orders. So we also have Guard reserves that are eligible if they have served on that one day of federal orders.
So, Commander, what would you have to say to not only our veterans here in Minnesota, but to their spouses? Is the American Legion a welcoming organization? Do you want those people in to help with the local community projects, the state projects, the federal things?
Exactly. We want to be able to help the families as much as we can, and we are involved in communities, and we do a lot for communities, so we just want to make them more aware of what we can help them and what we can do for them.
And you still have other things like Legion baseball and
Boy State oratorical contests, which offer scholarships in both of those programs. So,
And you've got a little facility up around Nisswa that helps take care of people.
It is.
Legionville.
Legionville, yes. And I am president of Legionville. I've been president for 3 years now. I thought I could get out of that job, but they said, no, there's nothing that says you can't be president of Legionville and the commander. So.
And that's in pretty good shape. You built a new building in the last few years, and I hope the bog is gone.
The bog has left. We have 560 acres up there, and we teach safety programs now. It used to be just a school crossing guard program, but now we have added safety programs in there for lifeguard training.
Commander, we have to take a short break. We're speaking with Commander Carl Moon from the Department of Minnesota American Legion. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Commander Carl Moon, who is the Department Commander of the American Legion here in Minnesota. And Commander, the Department Commander of the American Legion, you also belong to an organization called the Commander's Task Force, which is made up of the 8 federally chartered veteran service organizations, including American Legion, VFW, Purple Heart. There's a whole list of them.
Right.
And they come together on a monthly basis and on an annual basis to try to combine their membership, find some priorities for legislative initiatives for the year, and then go up to the legislature and work on those on Veterans Day on the Hill. How have you found those meetings? I'll bet they're pretty interesting.
They are. And not only am I a member of that, I got selected as the chairman this year.
Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Another job.
They saw you coming.
They did.
Commander. So how's that going over there?
It's going well. We met about a month ago and decided that we had two main projects that we wanted to work on this year for the legislature. One was the Modernize the Homestead Exemption exclusion, and we wanted to try to raise eligibility, increase the eligibility, but also increase the amounts that you receive for that homestead exemption.
So that means for our disabled veterans, depending on your degree of disability,
correct,
you get a break on your real estate taxes on your home. They haven't changed those amounts for years. They need to be adjusted for inflation. So you're working on that, and you're trying to increase eligibility.
Right, and we want to make sure there's a clause in there for inflationary-based increases.
Going forward.
Yes.
Okay.
And one other one was we want to waive the license fees for hunting, trapping, and fishing for all veterans, disabled or not, for all veterans.
So that's with the DNR here in Minnesota.
Yes.
That it seems to me like that's been on the list in the past, and did we have a little success or not?
Not as much as we think we're going to have this year. We think it's going to be a good year for that one.
They had some breaks, I think, for state parks and some other things.
Correct. Yeah.
But there's still more work to do.
Yes.
And I'm sure you, as the American Legion Department Commander and the CTF, are working with national to some degree because there's national legislation pending out there as well. And so the American Legion is involved to a greater extent than a lot of people are aware.
We are. We are very much so.
And it's like they say, we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. There's more work to do. We've got to take care of our veterans. We've got to take care of their families. PACT Act was passed a while back and expanded eligibility for toxic exposures. There's a lot of good work going on.
Yeah, and many people think the GI Bill was Congress that did it. No, it was the Legion that started
been around
that.
Over 100 years.
Yes.
Commander, as the department commander, state commander of American Legion, the commander usually has a commander's project. What's yours this year?
Mine's a Veterans Defense Project, and that group, along with the Legion, helped establish the Restorative Justice Act back in 2021. What this does, it provides a probationary period that allows veterans with low-level criminal offenses to avoid prison. It set up veterans courts. But the problem is these veteran courts are only in 27 out of the 87
counties
in Minnesota. We're trying to expand that with this group to more rural counties so that we can educate the court systems, the attorneys, the VSOs, the veteran service officers in those counties as to what is available to help these veterans return to a productive life.
So they've come a long way. It wasn't too many years ago. It was only 2 or 3 counties. Now you're 27.
Correct.
But you need to get further out.
Further out, yes.
And make sure it's available. And this isn't – it's people think wrong about veterans courts. This isn't a way to get them out of trouble. This is a way to give them an alternative to get some education and earn their way out of whatever trouble they might have been in.
There's a one-year probationary period that they have to graduate from, basically, to be eligible to have their record expunged.
So it's a way really to help veterans right the ship, get back to work, and
be a productive citizen.
Be productive. Very good, sir. Commander, we've only got about a minute left. Anything else you want to share with our listenership all over Minnesota about the American Legion here in the state?
Basically, we're here to help you. If there's any questions about our programs, services, our membership, please visit our website, which is mnlegion.org.
Very good, and I'm sure you're looking for as many new members as you can find.
Our numbers impress Congress, so with more membership, we do more for veterans.
And Commander is chairman of the Commander's Task Force. We look forward to having you back to tell us about all the things we're going to do that coming up on Veterans Day on the Hill, which comes up next spring.
Be looking forward to it.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Commander Carl Moon from the Department of Minnesota American Legion on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center is Director Pat Kelly. Director Kelly, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thank you for having me back.
Sir, Doug Wortham's been in this chair for a while now, and he's going to be the principal host, so I hope you're enjoying him. But occasionally I get to fill in, so it's good to hear your voice today.
Well, you know, I miss being on the radio with you. You're right. Doug is doing a phenomenal job, but pretty hard to replace that golden voice of Tom Lyons.
Well, thank you, sir. I understand the Minneapolis VA Medical Center got some good news lately and some great ratings.
You know, yeah, so the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services every year rates hospitals, all hospitals, federal hospitals, civilian hospitals, on a five-star scale. And we received a 5 out of 5-star rating in quality here at the Minneapolis VA. And there, you know, there's only 9 hospitals in the state of Minnesota, and very few hospitals around the nation that get this distinction. And so what it tells veterans, I hope the message to veterans, Tom, is that when they come to the Minneapolis VA, they're going to get quality health care. And this is measured by Center for Medicare and Medicaid. This isn't a VA measure. This is from our civilian leadership. And so, again, rated against other hospitals in our country, we did very well. It was really promising.
Well, that's great to hear, Director. You know, I get my health care out there, and it's been superb for years, and congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
Director, it seems like we've talked about this every year since COVID came up, but it's the fall. It's season for flu shots and COVID shots. Do I need a COVID shot again this year?
Yeah, I would recommend it, Tom. So I just got my 5th COVID shot, so we have the COVID vaccine. You know, what we're doing is we're sort of for veterans that come in, if they want to get their flu shot, we'll go ahead and get them connected with their COVID shot. So one-stop shopping, come in. You know, if you see your doctor, you know, you can get that done in clinic. Alternately, on the 10th of October, we're having our final event here in our community-based clinics, and that's going to be in the afternoon of the 10th of October. So veterans can walk in. Here at the medical center, again, you get your COVID shot, you get your flu shot, get them done in the same arm, get it over with, and, you know, we are seeing more COVID activity, and, of course, it's the flu season. So we're recommending that veterans get both those vaccines.
And they can also get them if they come in for a regularly scheduled appointment?
Absolutely, yeah.
Very good, sir. Yeah. I know you've got a lot of activities coming up, and I was out there a while back, and you had your monthly food pantry was open, and I understand a lot of our veterans are food insecure, and they were able to come in and not only get food but get help with other issues.
We have seen increasingly more veterans participating in that, and you know, while you don't like to think of veterans as being food insecure, if they are, we want to help them, and so we've gotten the word out on that, and like I say, we are meeting the demand. The next one's October 15th, and I hope a lot of veterans, if you have food insecurity and you need help, nothing to be ashamed of. Come to the medical center on October 15th. We're gonna take care of you.
Very good, sir. And there's one other project I want to ask you about. I've been a big fan of this, and I've been waiting for years. You had a groundbreaking for your new women's clinic.
You know, we had such a great event, Tom. It's been a couple weeks now, but you know, we typically cut a ribbon when we open a new building or a new facility. This was so important that we decided we were going to do a groundbreaking as well, and then in 18 months we'll do a ribbon cutting. But, you know, this is a standalone, dedicated women's clinic it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be beautiful. All the services that are going to be in that building. So we had a groundbreaking. You know, we had both of our national senators were here. Senator Klobuchar and Smith were here. Congressman McCollum. We had lots of VIPs and great attendance. A lot of women veteran advocates. So yeah, that was a great event. And we're building. You know, it's under every day moving ground around out there. And we think by about March of 2026, we're going to cut a ribbon, and we're going to have you out for that, because that's going to be a great event.
It'll be fun, sir, and it'll be great for the women to have their own entrance. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. As I said at the opening, Doug Wortham is on assignment, recording a couple of special shows with our 34th Infantry Division Red Bull Soldiers, and he'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Don Kerr from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, Carl Moon, the American Legion Department Commander, Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Brad Lindsay of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and learn about epilepsy care for our veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.